Thoroughbred Horse Racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The nine-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick five with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and putting aside the, just actually pulled up the numbers on those two stakes. I think we kind of framed it correct. With leading the charge, and the girls' race, Timeless Rose, Bumble of Love, nice sequence again tomorrow. What good race, and actually there another Indianapolis was another venue that took a break, like we talked about with Johnny. So there's a lot to be, there's a lot of benefit. It's good for everybody. It's good for the horses, good for the entry box, et cetera. Andy's going to join us in a moment, Casey raising him. So let me move this out and bring in the rest of the Saratoga weekend. And we still got a little Del Mar to do, right? And here we go. I have not printed Friday's action yet. I just got Wednesday and Thursday to start to look forward to. And let me, in fact, so that I can act like I'm prepared for Andy. he will catch me. He's going to catch me flat-footed. It's funny. Last week I had done all the handicapping for Wednesday and Thursday. Actually, in this particular case, I'm behind. There was just almost too much. And then, like we've been talking today, you know, to have these kinds of Mondays and Tuesdays with, you know, with what Philly had going on and, you know, the Mid-Atlantic concept at Monmouth, and I haven't even gotten to that yet, have I? All right. It's a full dance card. I should mention, and probably tomorrow at the track, we'll get a visit in with Bill Gallo and maybe with Joe. The Walsh, the Michael Walsh novice hurdle tomorrow, with that Freddie Flintshire coming back, who's now won two straight, including the win at Saratoga, and had broken the maiden for Kerry Breon. In fact, it's got to be the favorite, right? Yeah, 5-2 favorite, Freddie Flintshire. Perfect Tapatino comes back. If I'm not mistaken, I think Leslie Young swept those the races. I'll cover this tomorrow. Maybe we'll get Leslie. Maybe we'll get a visit in. I've been wanting to get her on all year. She's having a terrific, terrific season, is Leslie Young. And here we go. Andy's not ready yet, so I can quickly do this. Yeah, Bally Bristol, easy winner, cause for pardon, a creative cause, gelding, and under Tom Garner. And then again, Leslie for Leaper's Fork with Our Bab, won by 3 in the stake, the Randolph Rouse. So Leslie Young continues to pile up wins. So congratulations to Leslie. I'm going to try to flag her down and get a visit in with her. You know, in addition, tomorrow, it's funny, tomorrow is kind of a steeplechase special, even though it's not a big stake, the $75,000 Walsh novice. But the John's Call, the restricted John's Call, just a field of 6. But I think you've heard me say before, for me, doing this show, one of the really, I don't know if you want to call it a seminal moment, but it was a moment that meant a lot to me. Fairly early on, when I started, you know, getting involved with the show and was spending time in South Florida, of course, my mom was ailing, and so part of it was to be, you know, near her. And I, you know, my work, I could do, you know, my food service work as a broker, I could do anywhere. And I was working remotely before it was fashionable. But, you know, I started to reach out and try to get, you know, trainers on the show. And, you know, at first, and we've discussed this with Andy too, because Andy was instrumental. Andy helped me so much with people that, you know, nobody knew who I was really in 2005, 2006. And, you know, and so Andy like would call, you know, like he got Steve Chris to come on. He got Andy Beyer to come on and so forth. But when I got like trainer lists, barn lists, yeah, you just call cold and you know, ask somebody to come on, and you know, some said sure, and others, you know, others had no idea what they were saying yes to or what they were coming on. But I called Tom Voss, who of course had a reputation as being, you know, rather gruff, and that's not an accurate, frankly. I never really thought it was accurate, an accurate depiction of Tom Voss, because I found him incredibly warm and generous and interesting. And but I remember calling and started to introduce myself, and you know, Mr. Voss and Steve Bick, I'm doing this radio show, and he said, I know who you are. And I was sort of taken aback. He says, I listen. He says, the show's great. He said, I'm happy to come on. Is that why you're calling? I said, yes. And I remember it gave me a tremendous boost of confidence about what we were doing with the show. And so I just tomorrow's the John's call. And Voss has missed. He would hang out, for those of you that, you know, been around any period of time, you could see Voss hanging out on race day. He'd hang out by the entry into the clubhouse under the awning because he was smoking. He was smoking every minute. No sooner would he grind one out, he'd light one up. And, you know, he was one of those people that you could, you know, you could go up to and you know, talk to and have spent a few minutes. So I the John's call is always a great moment to pay tribute to Tom Voss, one of the great horsemen of his era or any other. Andy Serling joins us. Good morning. Andy.
I'm here.
Good morning. I was kind of vamping a little bit, and with the John's call being run tomorrow, I had to pay a little tribute to Tom Voss.
Okay.
Well, like a great horseman, a great character. Andy, what a good Saturday and another great week of racing. And here we are getting ready for Travers, but some thoughts about Nest and put her into perspective at this point, two-thirds of the way into the season.
I don't really have a... I mean, she's obviously very good, and she's obviously better and a lot better at this point than the other three-year-old fillies. She's really progressed a great deal this year. You know, she was a solid horse who really, you know, sort of came to life in the Ashland, even though she had won other races. She ran well when she won the Demoiselle, obviously with a wide trip that day, but she wasn't beating, you know, particularly good horses, and she really got a huge win in the Ashland. She's gotten better with all her starts, and really a lot better even since the Oaks, because she was clearly second best to Secret Oath. Now, you could argue Secret Oath has taken a step backwards since then, but she's really taken a big step forward, and she obviously ran well in the Belmont Stakes, and she's been terrific up here. I think people tend to get carried away and have difficulty putting performances into perspective. And I know there's some people that think that she would be favored in the Distaff right now, and maybe she would be if we ran today. But I kind of wonder, you know, depending on how well the Clairieres and Malathots and Search Results and even Latruska run in the personal ensign, and then, you know, whatever races they may choose to run before the Breeders' Cup, you know, how they all stand, because it appears that Nest will be waiting for the Breeders' Cup. She'll obviously be, if not the choice, one of the choices in a Distaff. But she's also a horse that, you know, she's improved so much even in the last couple of months that she could improve even more, and she certainly could win the Breeders' Cup Distaff. But this is a pretty tough year for the older horses, and we'll see how they, like I said, we'll see how they do on Saturday, and we'll see, you know, where they make their next preps and how they do in those races. But she's very terrific, Nest. I mean, we never knock her. How good she really is, I guess we'll see over time.
You know, it's so
better than the person she's running against now.
Well, and it just feels like a kind of a slightly unusual circumstance when you get a filly like this who really excels at 10 furlongs, Andy, and you know,
I don't agree with that. I mean, I thought her race at 8.5 furlongs at Ashland was terrific, and her effort at 1.8 miles was better than her effort in the Alabama. So I think that she has the ability to go 10 furlongs, and distance isn't an issue for her. So because of that, she's going to probably have an even bigger advantage over her rival in a race like the Alabama, because they probably get worse with more distance. But
right,
she ran a slower race in the Alabama that's in PCA Oaks, and that's no surprise. Who can figure anybody that thought she was run faster than she ran the CC Oaks is kidding themselves. You know, that was an incredible performance. It was one of those when she sort of got ran off in the field and just sort of steamrolled from there. But I don't think she I think she's very good going longer distances where a lot of these horses probably aren't. But I don't think that there's any argument out there that says she's a faster horse going 10 furlongs or more than she is at 9. I don't understand that argument at all. I think she'll be fine at this staff. And maybe she had an advantage from some of these others at 10 furlongs because maybe they would be less suited, though Malathot and Clarier had no problem with it last year. But she's as good, if not better, at 9 furlongs than 8.5. You know, we tend to make these comments based on results too often. It's kind of like the Medaglia d'Oro, the stupid argument that he wasn't a mile and a quarter horse, even though he ran most of the best races in his career he ever ran were at a mile and a quarter. How was his Belmont Stakes, where he happened to finish second at a mile and a half? It's just that Pleasantly Perfect was very good in longer distances. If you look at the Breeders' Cup Classic he ran, well, he was much the best that day. He duelled with Congaree and was involved in the fast pace. And, okay, he got run down at the wire by Pleasantly Perfect, but he ran a better race. He just didn't finish first. And people tend to be results-oriented. I don't think there's any... What Nest is good is she's efficient at all these distances, but she's not necessarily... She hasn't shown herself to be better at longer distances. I mean, right now, the watermark for a career is the CCA Oaks.
Right.
And for her, when is she going to run a mile and a quarter in the future? Because contrary to popular belief, I don't think the connections are super eager to be running her against male. And, you know, I hope she has such a great four-year-old season that they decide to run the Breeders' Cup Classic next year and she's a contender. But that's a long way from happening, right?
Sure.
I'm not really sure why every time a filly runs a good race, the first comment out of so many people's mouths, and most of it's on social media, where the first comment out of people's mouths is usually the wrong one, she should be running against the boys. Why?
I have no idea.
I mean, Mike Rapoli and Aaron Weller and Todd Letcher were 100% correct running the Alabama. I mean, why would you run the Alabama, you know, one of the most prestigious races in the country, for $600,000, where you're 2-5 or something, as opposed to Travers, where she would have been second or third or fourth choice, depending on who ran, right?
Yep.
And she wouldn't have won. So, I mean, in all likelihood. So why? I mean, even if she had, you know, who knows? But you know, why would anybody suggest it? What person? You know, you might think about it for a second. There's nothing wrong with entertaining the notion, and then, you know, having a drink and coming to reality or something, right? But I don't really... What person wouldn't run in that race? She was 2-5, for God's sake.
Well, this is actually the explanation comes from one of your, you know, one of the things that I know drives you crazy, which is, you know, the carrying on over Ascot and the... You know, the idea that, they do it in Europe all the time. Well,
there are less opportunities for fillies in the way that they have here. And they do it. And turf is also different than dirt. You know?
Exactly.
Fillies running against males in the turf, A, there's opportunities for them. But, you know, I mean, nobody has a problem with, obviously, you know, that Stormy did well. But also, the filly that ran second in the four-star Dave, the brand Regal Glory. You know, there's nothing wrong with running her there, but it's a question of opportunity and what's available. And I don't see why she would run in the Classic as opposed to the distaff. And then these people use this mile and a quarter argument, which completely falls apart under scrutiny. And, you know, this is, I mean, what price would, if she ran the Classic this year, she'd probably be double digit odds.
Yeah.
Well, how would she win that race, you know? And why would they do that? We don't have as much success as these people have had by doing the wrong thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, one thing to run at Belmont, especially this year's Belmont, you know? There's one that's very different. Anyway, I'm confident that between Mike and Aaron and Todd, they'll make the smart choices with her going forward. I hope she's so good next year that they really do think about running her the Whitney or something. That would be amazing. I hope that's how good she is. And it's not impossible that she is that good.
But yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, that would be fun. That's a different story, though.
They're fun. They are fun. But I don't think you just run her there, and you're going to run there because people on Twitter think you should run her there. In fact, you don't run somewhere because people think you should be on Twitter, right? Whether you do it on Twitter, right? Twitter's full of people that criticize speed figures that they don't understand.
Well, do me a favor, if you don't mind. Why don't you address that? Because that was quite something.
Which one?
There's a lot of stupidity out there. But I mean, the idea that these are style points that a mathematical equation should be
on. Right. Oh, that Ness should have gotten higher than 99?
Yeah.
That was a slow race. I mean, I'm not criticizing Ness. He's terrific. But the track had sped up. And I think, you know, to be fair, but once again, these people that make these comments don't really pay attention and they make these comments. The track, which had been much slower, I mean, don't forget, she ran 51 and change, and she got a 104. So to a person that doesn't, you know, I have a problem with saying, you know, she ran 51 and change, and then she runs 11 and a half seconds faster for the mile and a quarter. Why is that number lower? You know, I don't understand fee figures. Explain it to me. That's a completely different conversation, which nobody would have a problem with. Say, well, obviously the track has gotten faster than it was when she ran the CCA Oaks. And if you've been paying it, if you pay attention to track speeds, which a lot of people do, not just figure makers, they notice the track got much faster this year. I mean, you know, Steve Asmussen's impressive echo again, 115.89 for a two-year-old. There's no chance that horse would have run that race even a week earlier, much less, you know, a month earlier on this track, right? We saw that Mexican Wonderboy ran 109 and change. Now, he had a 103 buyer, but he still ran 9 and change. Well, I think the only other horse to meet, maybe, that ran 9 and change was Jackie's Warrior. I think you've heard of him, right? He's pretty good. So the 203 and 1 wasn't comparable to the 151 and change she ran in the Oaks. It was running a track that was a lot faster. I mean, I think it's very reasonable to suggest that had she run that same race, the CCA Oaks, on this track, she would run, I'm not just throwing out a number, probably below 149. Or certainly in that range. Just a very different, the track got much, much quicker. That's all it comes down to. The track was much quicker Saturday than it was on other days. And, you know, instead of just, you know, asking, why is this number seemingly low relative to other races? You know, you have, you know, various nitwits saying, you know, the buyer figures are no longer relevant and all these dumb things. It's like, okay, well, they're not relevant, but they are a significant part of the pool. And if you really don't like them and don't agree with them, that's great for you. You should bet against them. See, that works out. And listen, I disagree with figures sometimes, and Andy and I have disagreements about figures. And I talk about it on the show in different figures, you know, but that doesn't mean that I don't respect them. But if you're going to disagree with them, you should at least understand where your disagreement comes from and have a valuable point. Other than, that number looks slow to me. Okay. You sound dumb to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
That number looks slow to me is my favorite line.
Yeah. Because this is not the Olympics circa 1972 where, you know, the East German judge comes in low. It doesn't work that way.
Didn't Mark Spitz win 5 gold medals in 72?
7, no?
Was it 7?
7, I think.
That's one of the few Olympic athletes I remember. I don't know why. I'm going to watch
I want to say 7. That was Montreal.
I think you're right. I think he won 5 individual and 2 team.
That could be, actually. That very well could be. And he won a total of 9. Oh, it wasn't, excuse me, what's wrong with me? It's not, that wasn't Montreal, it was Munich. My God. What the hell's wrong with me? Yeah. Montreal was 76, maybe, I think. Yeah, how many?
Montreal,
here you
76. Go. What? You're looking it up?
I got to look it up now. 72. Here we go. 7 gold medals.
I didn't doubt you.
Don't you remember that great Sports Illustrated cover of him with the medals?
I do remember it.
Yeah. There's been a bunch of...
Frankly, that's not what I remember from the 1972 Olympics. But anyway.
No, exactly. Andy, I want one other stake from certainly from Saturday, and Haughty. I think you, if I'm not mistaken, you latched on to Haughty, and that was smart.
I got paid. I mean, the second horse was best. Let's be fair. It was a very good ride by Jose Ortiz. You know, once he cleared off the lead and was able to establish it, and the good news on the inner turf is the rails are going out 9 feet next week, so we won't have to worry about the bias going forward. But, yeah, I mean, I think that my reasoning for Haughty was sound. I think she was second best in the race, but at $13, you're allowed to get paid with the second best horse. But, and you certainly bet the best horse and run second enough that sometimes you bet the second best horse and win. You just sort of want to remember the next time you bet the best horse and run second. I mean, yes, that, to be fair, I mean, there are times that I whine and moan that I bet the best horse and lost. So, because I do think that, what's the name of the horse that should have won, the Godolphin horse?
Into the Moonlight.
Into the Moonlight, who I bet in the Belmont Oaks, but we won't draw on that at 7-1. She was second best that. She was actually second best that day, though. You know, but Haughty was a horse that I don't think, you know, and I made this point that in a it's fair to say she ran the best race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf. I didn't bet her that day, so I bet on consumer or whatever spending that day. She ran the bog at Penn National, and then she tried a mile and a quarter. So she really hadn't had a fair chance to show what she could do since then. And for that reason, I thought at the price, she was a decent play. And she was.
Yeah.
She got an excellent ride by Jose, and she got the front. And you can save ground like that. And Into the Moonlight didn't break that sharply and probably didn't have the best of trips. But when you're cutting back from a mile and a quarter, a mile and 3/16, you're not likely to be as forward as you were in those races. And I think she ran very well. I think she's a nice horse. I look forward to these horses running in the QE2. You know, you look at some of the horses out there. Spenderella continues to show how good she is for Grand Motion, beating up on overmatched foes out in Del Mar. You know, you think of her and Haughty and the Culets of the world, you know, being out there and then Into the Moonlight. You'd have to think would probably come back to Keeneland for the QE2, right? You know, that's shaping up as a pretty good race. I don't know where Pizza Bianca is. I don't know if she's shown that she's even remotely competitive with these horses anymore, but it'll be interesting to see if she comes around.
That's a good point.
You know, I wonder what they'll do with her. What's the race? They run the Sands Point now? We run that in New York? I was going to say at Belmont, but we're all at Aqueduct. Maybe they look for that and use that as a springboard of the QE2 or something? I hope so.
That's true. I've not looked at the that's going to be so. It's going to be weird.
I mean,
weird,
it's really
actually
the only place to run unless you go to Monmouth, right? Because there's no going to be actually turf racing at Churchill Downs.
Nope.
You can't imagine there'll be turf racing there until at best the next spring.
Yes.
After that debacle, I feel bad. I mean, listen, they tried to do the right thing. You know, I think lost in this, and obviously it's easy to be critical of what's happened with their course, and it is easy to be critical of it, but having said that, it's not like they went out there and intentionally screwed it up, you know what I mean? They spent $10 million, that's kind of lost in the thing. They spent $10 million trying to fill the good turf course. They didn't go out there and say, we're going to screw this up and screw up turf racing for, you know, right, for 2 years in Kentucky. They put up the money and tried to do the right thing, and it's just kind of blown up in their face, but it's not as though their intentions were poor, you know? And I think that's a little bit lost in what has turned into quite a debacle, and I'm sure they're aware of that as well. But it wasn't done out of malice or out of, you know, intentional stupidity or something. They tried to, they put the money up. They tried to do the right thing. It just didn't work for whatever reasons.
That'll happen. As,
yeah, you know. We're good in racing for doing the wrong thing and sort of not getting blamed for it. And we're also good at racing for somebody trying to do the right thing and getting blamed for it as well. Anyway.
Just anyway, poking around. What was how impressed were you with the maiden winner, with Echo Again?
I'm very impressed with the Aspies and Horse.
You know,
I think one of the things, you have to be careful because one of the things we all do is we sit around and we wait for the good two-year-olds to come up at Saratoga, right? And you want them to come up. You know, you want there to be fast horses, you know? You want an Uncle Mo, right? You want these exciting horses. And, you know, the Colts this year, there were some decent performances. Disarm ran well for Steven, the second start. And, you know, we saw some okay horses. Wayne's Lucas's horse ran very well the time before. I thought, you know, the Michelle Lovell horse ran really well and win the special. And I like that winner that Brad Cox had in the in the Stanford. It seems like a long, long time ago. But there was nobody that you went, wow, you know, so you're waiting for the wow. And then when the wow comes, you tend to sometimes get a little bit overly excited by it. And at least in this horse's case, I don't think the hype was undeserved. I mean, you know, my friend Nick Tamaro, he's trying to steal the Parade Rainer title from me. But, you know, the champ holds on to it very tightly, and Nick's got a lot of work to do. I got years on him. But, you know, by complaining that there's a slow pace and all this crap, and, it's like, and he's right. It's fair to say the pace wasn't very fast, and you have to realize the paces in the six and a half here can be very quick because it's a long run-up. But that horse accelerated when he had to, you know what I mean? Yes, yeah. It was done with the benefit of a moderate pace, but when they came to him in the stretch and it looked like Todd's horse was making a real run at him, you know, suddenly he just exploded away, right? So I think that Echo Again feels like a really good horse. I'm really sorry to hear that Prank is on the shelf.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate news. But, you know, that Chocolate Gelato, the other horse that Todd ran for Michael, this one for Michael Coley, the other for Frankless Eclipse, she certainly looks like the goods at this point. And they're, you know, I think they're the two best 2-year-olds we've seen so far this year. The meet's not over and big races to come, but I think Echo Again really feels like the goods, doesn't he?
It seemed like, you know, and it's funny because as you kind of were hinting at, there's always a few of these every meet where there's the rumors start, you know, 3 weeks ahead of time. Oh, wait till this one debuts.
And then they suck.
Yeah, and then they...
So far, they've all sucked, right? They've all the workouts are great. This is a loaded race and, you know, and whatever. Yeah. They all can't run. I mean, the one, you know, that's so much that there was that warrior horse of Todd's. Years ago, he ran twice. The horse who broke his mane the last week, and they were talking about the horse in hushed tones. And then he ran, and he ran a very moderate race and won. And then he ran the Champagne, I want to say, behind Complexity. Was it Complexity? Yeah.
Could have been.
Not nothing, and never ran again. Something Warrior.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think Warrior, something. I don't know.
Well, we're actually talking to Todd at 11:45, and he's got Pioneer of Medina returns today.
Yeah, who's that?
A Derby. He was in the Derby. He was kind
I'm
of
sorry
a.
About tra- I'm sorry about Charge It. That must be very frustrating.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating for us, but it's definitely more frustrating for him. And I feel bad for Mandy Pope. You know, she put so much into the game, and she really has a good one. And you know, the time, everything in life is timing. And as Todd said, if he had a few more days or a week, he would have been able to make it. And I'm sorry he's not, because he's an exciting horse. And you really wanted to see what he could do in the Travers, because obviously he was crazily impressive in the Dwyer, but a very different story in a mile race where he has no match field to running in this race. But probably would have been the second choice to Epicenter. So that's tough for Todd. You know, he's had some good, a lot of good things to happen, some nice looking 2-year-olds, but still. That's a big frustration. I mean, you know, to have that kind of chance to win the Travers.
Well, before we go, Andy, a quick thought on the, you know, starting with Epicenter and Cyberknife.
You know, I don't have any thoughts on it because we'll draw the race tonight. I'll look at the PPs, you know, tonight or tomorrow or whatever, and I'll sort of start figuring it out then. I don't want to have a lot of preconceived notions. I mean, obviously, Epicenter is the worst to beat. I haven't really thought about Cyberknife. I tend to think he probably has an uphill battle, but he had improved last time, and I'm not going to count him out. And, you know, I don't think Zandon's impossible. You want to consider how much, you know, can is Arturius, can he take another step forward? And, you know, is it reasonable to think that early voting can bounce back? Because he had done nothing but run well in his races, and his Preakness was terrific. And, okay, even if you want to say Epicenter ran better than the Preakness, he was awful in the Jim Dandy. And, you know, but if Chad's running him back, he must feel as though he's going to run better. But, and you know, in my heart, I want him to win. But, you know, at this point, it's hard to have any confidence in him whatsoever, right? I know he's a good horse somewhere. I just don't know if we're going to see it. I hope
we do. And the one that, coming off of a loss, that you got to be expecting is Jack Christopher in the Jerkins.
Yeah, though that Jerkins field is not easy, but he is
no,
the worst.
No,
make no mistake.
No. Good group.
That division got a lot tougher, you know, with Gunite and Accretive's performance in the Amsterdam. And Conagher, right?
Yes.
You know, let's see what he can do against the big boys. I'd love to see him run well. You know, keep in mind, none of us had heard of Run Happy before the King's Bishop, now Alan Jerkins. And now, everybody on earth has heard of Run Happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, but I mean, listen, that was the coming out party, right? Did you ever hear? You kind of, when we talked about Run Happy, you know, you kind of knew about him because of Chuck, and, you know, we remember his debut and things, but it's not like when he ran in the King's Bishop that year, we were thinking, oh, Run Happy's here, you know, paid a big price. And suddenly there was a new sheriff in town. So we'll see what happens.
Hey,
are you
going to
come back this weekend, or what? But
say again?
Big weekend at, where at Prairie Meadows or something that you're going out?
So ridiculous. I will be broadcasting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from Saratoga Racecourse.
Did I tell you somebody came in the studio tent looking for you the other day? Is this where Steve Bick does his show? I told you, right? I told the guy to leave the front exit, go down east to Lake Avenue, take a right, and go about 20 miles.
That's not funny. That's, you know, it's a little funny.
It's a little funny.
It's a little funny. Okay.
All right. My mom's phone is ringing. Mom, I'm here with my mom on the porch.
Nice.
She's reading Hamilton, and I'm talking to you.
Excellent. Well,
she has to finish Hamilton before the meet's up so I can take it when I go to New York.
Perfect. Perfect.
I think it might be a good book to make a musical out of, so I'm going to read it and see if that's a good idea.
I'll hook you up with a producer if you're interested. My brother.
That works. That works. I'll give him a call for me. Okay, you got Todd coming. I'm going to go. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, and the draw tonight, and we'll have a Travers Field to start to discuss in earnest. Case, grab Popo here for about, let's see, 36. Yeah, for about 8 minutes, we'll get a little Popo pop in, and I know he's looked at the three stakes, even off the turf. I think off the turf, that Park's Dash feels like, you know, the MTO we mentioned looks imposing. But he's also got the Catherine Sophia to look at, and the Smarty Jones. I retweeted those for you, all right? And then we'll have Todd to close out what's been another busy morning. I did not ask Andy for any opinions of tomorrow, and I've got to come up with. I've got only six more chances on the DePaula play of the day. It's been torturous. I've got 5 seconds, and I have not hit one. I mean, last year I hit I think six of the first eight. It's been very tough, and kind of finding the right, you know, my inclination is to find a bit of a price as opposed to a likely winner. And I don't want to necessarily, you know, just simply, go for a 2-to-1 shot. That's not my, inclination. So, the other thing that's hurt me, honestly, and I think by the time the meet is over, there'll be as many New York bred long on the grass races, but last year that was my steady diet. That was my go-to play, and frankly, it's my go-to play all the time. There has not been as much of a steady diet of those, and I think right now we've only had 9 or 10. I'll do those stats actually maybe tonight, going into the last 2 weeks. There's going to be less than normal, so those are my wheelhouse. Popo Morales joins us. AM Wager and Form to Win, and for those of you that are seeing the Form to Win banners around the internet at fine internet establishments everywhere, I invite you to go to formtowin.com because it's all remade. There's the tutorials, the academy, and everything that we've been talking about. Popo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
How'd you make out this weekend?
Oh, Friday was the better day, just with the prices, first to act and leader of the band were two of the top three on form to win. So that was a nice exacta, but couldn't get creative from a price standpoint up until yesterday at Colonial. In race six, they had a heavy favorite, the number six, Ready to Venture, but form to win liked Sarah Mia, who went off at like 35-1, I think, for a nice exacta. So
sweet.
It's nice to find some prices after a good week in racing. Just from a price standpoint, I was struggling to find some decent prices, even a pair in third. I actually liked Goddess of Fire underneath Nest and formed a win like that too. She just couldn't get up, but I thought she ran well. Went off
she
at a good price.
Well.
So
no, I agree.
Good idea, just didn't materialize. That's all.
Well, and listen, they got to run for you no matter what. But the right now the key is to, you know, coming to Amwager and getting involved, because the power of the app is right there for you, built in, as you started to explain here over the last couple of weeks. And how are people responding?
Yeah, we're actually doing very well. We saw an uptick in users that were using it on their laptop. Last week, we're tracking that. It's still skewed more towards mobile, but we saw an increase in users that are using it from the laptop. So we try to make it easy. So when you highlight a horse in form to win, and you go to wager, and you pulls up the betting part of Amwager, the horse is already highlighted there in your wager pad. So we try to make it seamless and easier for you to bet those horses that you identify using form to win.
Well, and if you go to the website, I mean, things are very much kind of spoon feeding you for those about how to basically, you know, interface and how to approach the you know, the style, the new revised style, and still as easy as ever in terms of, you know, a couple of slides and a couple of clicks to be able to handicap a race in seconds.
Yeah, so we try to make it simple, and I'm going to see if we can get my presets built into the app itself to make it even easier. So that way, I mean, you can create your own filters, but if you want to just use the ones that I've kind of designed, those will be available. And then the French Bulldog icon hopefully debuts next week. So any horse that I highlight in form to win will show up for Amwager users. Hopefully that makes it even easier. They just want to kind of look at who I identified and try to incorporate those horses into their picks also.
Well, we want you to get accustomed to it and get familiar, and the more you play with it, the more you're going to understand the power of it. And Papo, let's give him, I already retweeted the snapshots that are offered up from the Catherine Sophia and the Smarty Jones, and then the off the turf race, which kind of feels like the MTO. It's got a little bit of a heavy hand in there, but let's take a look at this pick three at Parks today.
Yeah, sure, Steve. The Parks Fast at race 10. Yeah, like you said, the MTOs look strong, and Doc Amster, the 10 horse, as well as the 9 Violent Turbulent. The price horse, though, you may want to get in underneath is the 4 horse, War Toscan, for Uriah St. Louis. Fits on form to win. He doesn't always win, but he gets pieces of the pie, so maybe he can run a good race and get in the verticals at least. And then turning to the Catherine Sophia, I mean, Interstate Daydream is the heavy favorite. I'd be interested in the 1 horse, Green Up, who absolutely fit on form to win, as well as the 6 horse, Shotgun Hottie. And then in the 12th, the Smarty Jones, Best Actor is ranked high on form to win, as well as Creative Minister. And then the price horse, it's interesting, is the 10 horse, Clapton. It's on form to win and is a bit of a price at
interesting.
12-1 on the morning line. So I'd be interested in working those 3 horses in.
And, of course, Camp David ended up scratching for Mike Maker. So you kind of Clapton moves up with the scratch. And
yeah, I just used the next horse up, which was Clapton with the scratch. So yeah, it's a good Tuesday at Parks. Hopefully the track.
Terrific.
I did not run. Do you know what the track setting is, Steve? Is it fast or is it muddy? Or
they were starting muddy, and it should continue to dry as the day goes on. The way it looks.
Okay. Yeah, and these races are later in the day, so. Hopefully it'll be fast, but if it's not, once again, you can use Formula One to just click on an off track, muddy or heavy. Well, we don't use heavy too much here in the U.S., but an off track, you can use that setting also just to get a quick analysis of what horses that perform well on a track rated anything other than fast.
Form to win, and we'll connect on Friday, Papo, for the Travers card, the thoughts, and going to be a good one.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve, and looking forward to your conversation with Todd.
Papo Morales, everybody, Form to Win, and available now as integrated into AmWager, and terrific offer going on right now, too. $300 offer for sign-ups, and invite you to look at everything that AmWager's got to offer. And now with the Form to Win integration, that much easier. Just one, not even one step. It's fully there. Todd Pletcher going to join us here momentarily, and I better pick and choose very carefully, actually, now that we're here at this juncture, because there's a bunch of things, obviously, from the last almost 3 weeks that we have not had a chance to talk to Todd. So, and we've only got about 10 minutes, so we better make it worthwhile. As soon as Casey gives me the high sign. Obviously, the Nest conversation is first and foremost, but it's had a good meet, and that includes, you know, some of the babies that we're going to be looking forward to in the fall. Todd Pletcher joins us now on the heels of running first and third in the Alabama Nest romping winner, and got us a fire picking up a grade one placing. Todd, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk about the filly first, and you know, it's not easy to go off at that short of a price in a race like this.
No, for sure. You know, when you run horses like Ness or Life Is Good in these big races, it's, you know, expectations are high, and anything other than an impressive win would be a disappointment. So you certainly don't take anything for granted, and just we're fortunate enough to get to kind of enjoy the last 16th of a mile there when she had, you know, a commanding lead, and just really proud of her and the race that she ran.
Who does she remind you of among your? You've certainly had your share of top flight 3-year-old fillies like this. Who is she like at this point in her career?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the obvious comparisons would be Malathot, since she's a curling out of an APND mare, you know, coming off a Alabama win last year. But you know, the thing that's really impressive about what Ness can do, and this was on display in the Alabama, was she put herself tactically in a very good position, but then, you know, just delivers a huge turn of foot when asked, and that's so rare to see one that's able to gallop along at a good solid pace. You know, the fractions weren't fast by any means, but she was able to put herself in a good stalking position. But when Irad set her down at the top of the stretch, you could visually see her accelerate and lower down and just literally find another gear. So I think that's you know, part of what makes her so good.
Well, the you win a race like this, and the way people are certainly, you know, excited about what lies ahead for her, you've already made some determination. Anything changed since Saturday?
Nothing's changed. We've, to be honest with you, everyone just sort of, you know, enjoyed the moment and happy that she came out of the race in excellent shape. And, you know, I think everyone's first reaction was to wait for either the Beldame or the Spinster, and that's probably what we'll end up doing. But usually I think it's always good to give it a week and assess how the horse is training and, you know, letting the picture kind of come more clear. But I would say that's still the most likely scenarios.
Well, as we say very frequently, I suppose when you can make two owners like Aaron Wellman and Mike Rapoli happy in one fell swoop, you've done good.
Yeah, that was very exciting. You know, to have a huge part of the Eclipse team there, and then Rapoli's entourage was in full force, and it was quite a winner circle scene, and you know, a lot of happy. Happy people and happy fans of Nest, and you know, it's just like I've said before, you know, it's part of what makes our job training these horses fun is when you see how much enjoyment people get out of it.
Well, it really you know, you hate to call it, oh, it was, you know, it was a slam dunk and this and that, but you know, they all have to go out and do it, and we certainly see enough horses get beat. And frankly, we didn't talk after the Whitney, and so we got to slip this in, because the sale, of course, was, you know, that literally the next 72 hours, and, you know, the same thing. You still got to go out and do it. You know, talk a little bit about the Life is Good and Happy Saver out of the Whitney.
Yeah, I mean, delighted with both of their performances, and you know, it came back a very highly rated race, very fast figures, and you know, Life is Good is just, you know, he's so devastating that, you know, he's got that, the way he broke from the gate and he went to the lead, and then, you know, at the three-quarter pole just sort of blew the race open, and he puts everyone in a precarious situation, because you let him go and you're not going to catch him, and you go with him and you're not going to stay with him. So, you know, he's super dangerous and just, you know, a very gifted horse. And Happy Saber, you know, he's such a warrior, yeah. and just, you know, to see him, give him a run for his money and literally just shows up every time and gives you a big performance. He's been a really, really fun and cool horse to have in the barn.
Going to do a little bit of a lightning round. We got about 2.5 minutes. Todd Pletcher with us. We're talking about the two biggest wins over the last 3 weeks, the Whitney and the Alabama. There's been plenty of good maiden winners, too. I'm going to ask you about a crazy runner-up. What did you learn about Witt in that Hall of Fame, and what do you do with him next?
Well, you know, we were pretty sure we figured out that he liked the turf when we breezed him on it, and I think his race in the Hall of Fame confirmed that. Unfortunately, he got kind of shuffled back behind a slow pace, but came with a big run. And yeah, we're thinking about running him on the 28th and the Better Talk Now, and taking advantage of the restricted clause on there. But you know, it's nice to see that he's got some options now, and certainly liked the way he handled the turf.
We were. Certainly feel bad about Prank and about Charge It, but they'll both recoup. And I want to ask you about another horse that didn't win, but certainly impressed, and that was Croupy, who just came absolutely flying, and everybody lining up for the return start of Croupy.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what we expected, maybe not quite to that extreme. You know, he dropped way far back, which, you know, we wanted to start him out at 7/8 because we knew he wasn't a speedball by any means, but I was really pleased with the way he finished and the way he galloped out, and he's trained well since then, so we'll hopefully see him again at the meet before it's over, and you know, I think he's a colt that you know, is going to appreciate added distance down the road, and not in any real rush with him, but you know, thinking ahead, he could be a Remsen type 2 year old.
You also, of course, Donegal Surges for the Donegal team. Chocolate Gelato with that good snapback performance. There's been a bunch of others. In fact, even yesterday, I watched when Game 7 won at Parks yesterday, the first winner for Opportunity. You also won the Stormcat stake yesterday. And what about a quick survey of today's action, the return of Pioneer of Medina?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to kind of find a soft place to land after the Derby, and this turned out to be a pretty solid race today. And both Smarty Jones and the Catherine Sophia that we have green up, these are not cupcake spots, but both horses are doing well, and I think you know, it's a good starting point for Pioneer Medina to hopefully get back on track. And if you look at his company lines, he's certainly run with the best. And Green Up, we feel like, is on you know, an upward incline. Hopefully, can keep moving forward.
Well, tons of horses getting ready for the weekend, and you got a whole bunch lined up for the New York Bred Card on Saturday, the Albany, and much more. You mentioned Green Up. You got Amore in the Risk Averse as well on Thursday. Montebello in the Albany, and so on and so forth. I'll save all of that, Todd, and just say thank you. Congratulations. Finish strong.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Todd Pletcher, everybody. And, of course, you can follow Todd these days. You no longer have to follow him at the phony account. you can actually go ahead and follow Pletcher Racing. I guess we're done. Todd Pletcher, Papa Morales, Andy Serling, John Dooley, Horseshoe Indianapolis, Johnny D, XB Johnny D, Greg Montgomery. Order the, if you don't like this year's poster, pick a different one. And Will Schwartz. Great, fun morning. Hope you enjoyed. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, if you missed anything. Back at Saratoga, Travers Week starts tonight with the draw, and we'll get into it from the race course tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Sirius XM at the races. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.